Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
Fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello, guys. Hello, everybody. I'm glad to have you along with us today here on the Guy James Show. Really, we are. And, we've got a variety of things to talk about today on the show. As usual, 3 hours worth of stuff to talk about in 2 hours. So we'll get it done somehow. I do want to remind everybody that we've got Rick Perlstein. He's going to be with us from the Campaign for America's Future. We talked to Rick when we were in Washington recently. He's going to be on a little later. At the bottom of this hour to talk to us about several different subjects, among them the big disaster that happened in New York City last week and the crumbling infrastructure of America, all the while the Republicans are bragging about cutting taxes and the country's going to hell in a handbasket. Other than that, we don't have a problem, now do we? We invite you to join the program today, 866-546-5254. We'd love it if you do. I was just looking at the chat room, the Head On Radio Network chat room, and Elo put up a survey there by the American Research Group, and I'm looking for someone. I am looking for someone after reading this. It says out of amongst Democrats, as far as Bush is concerned, 37% of the adults registered to vote. 37%. 1% approve of the job that Bush is doing, and 97% disapprove. I want to meet this person or people that comprise the 1% of Democrats who think Junior's doing a good job. Really would like to meet them. What's going on? Are they high, drunk? What is the deal with that? And I see amongst independents, 18% approve of the job Junior's doing and 79% disapprove. And amongst Republicans, as you might think, 68% approve of the way Bush is handling his job and 26% disapprove. That's a sorry stat right there, isn't it? 68% of Republicans approve of the way Junior's handling his job. Now, let's see. The economy's in a shambles. We've got more foreclosures than we've had in 35 years. Housing is going to hell in a handbasket. We're in a war that we're not doing so well in right now. I wonder what it is that those people think that this guy's doing a good job about. I really do. I know I rail on and on about that every day, but I really would wonder what it is these folks would say. I do. Our dear leader. Did you hear his speech yesterday? Mentioned, if I hadn't heard it myself, I don't think I would have believed it. But he gave a speech that was approximately 30 minutes long. And in that 30 minutes, I think it maybe is 33 minutes, how they get him to talk for 33 minutes is amazing to me. What could he say? What could that guy say that's intelligible that you couldn't say in about 10 seconds? Anyway, in a little over 30 minutes, he mentioned Al-Qaeda 95 times. 95 times. I'll bet you could turn on Fox News nowadays, and they must have a loop running, Al-Qaeda, 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 be afraid, be very afraid, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. Because that's what he did yesterday in that speech. You know, the subliminal message in the background, be afraid. Al-Qaeda, they're coming to get you. Probably be at your house tonight. That's the message coming from the Republicans right now. Be afraid. Well, that's the message he ran on the last time and won, so I guess, hell, why not? Why not try it again? I see Grover Norquist is back at it again. Of course, he never left, but here's the guy who said he wanted to drown the government in a bathtub. His advice for George Bush on Iraq? Well, Grover's always got great advice. It says, make groups like Move On look more extreme. Next week, Grover Norquist, head of the Americans for Tax Reform, and of course, as we all know, a good friend and a good crony of Jack Abramoff, is going to meet with Karl Rove about the administration's Iraq policies. In an interview with The Hill, Norquist says that he will tell Rove to change President Bush's rhetoric. And Norquist says, the one-paragraph explanation of what we're doing in Iraq has to have the word leaving in there, said Grover Norquist, a conservative leader and head of the Americans for Tax Reform. If Bush would move to leaving, then other people, including the MoveOn.org people and the Democrats, move to a more extreme position than you have because they have put themselves in the anti-Bush position. Norquist said Bush should reject a timeline and instead emphasize that he expects fewer troops in the region. In other words, Grover, just tell Georgie to lie out the old wazoo. That's what you're saying here. That is what he's saying here. You know, Bush has already tried emphasizing fewer troops in his July 4th speech. Said he longs for the day when there are far fewer American servicemen and women in Iraq, but then he adds real quick that you can't pull them out ahead of time. So these people will go to any lengths to try and make their point. I guess you all know that by now. There's nothing they won't say or do. There's no scheme they won't come up with. There's no there are no talking points that they won't try and promote if they think, true or false, whether they'll gain their objective by doing so. I was getting caught up on some of my reading last night. You know, as I've mentioned many times, Charlie Reese is one of my favorite writers. And so sometimes we agree, and a lot of times we couldn't be more far apart. But Charlie's work is always interesting, and it's always insightful, and it's always very clearly written. You don't have to guess what Charlie's saying. He has a column here in our local paper, and he's syndicated all around the country. And I know most of you know who Charlie Reese is. You never have to wonder where Charlie is on any particular subject. He's in your face with it. And what I wanted to say is that I agree with his latest piece, which says the war going on in Mesopotamia is the Republican war. But I want to go him one better and say that the war in Iraq and the probable conflict coming in Iran should be called the Great George W. Bush War, conjured up, marketed, and sold to the American public by George W. Bush and maintained by the entire Republican Party even after it proved to be the ultimate pig in a poke. That's what I would call it. I know it's a little lengthy, but that adequately explains the whole thing in one sentence. The continued support for George Bush's war really continues to defy reason. This nation has been involved in many wars, some just, some not, but no war has ever been promoted so adamantly and completely by one political party. And I'm truly fascinated to watch the discourse taking place in the House and the Senate these days, because how can it be that the two parties are so divided on the issue of this ill-begotten war? How can it be that 70% of the American public does not support Bush's war, and yet his party, the Republicans, absolutely refuse, and that's what they're doing, they refuse to listen to the will of the people? Sadly, many Democrats in Congress went along with Bush in the beginning, and to their everlasting shame, they'll have to live with being completely fooled by Bush and his war architects. But at least the Democrats have seen the light. Almost all of them. Let's leave Joe Lieberman out of that. Of course, he isn't really a Democrat now, is he? Most of them have realized their mistakes and accepted the reality of the present situation in Iraq. And although they've developed a small portion of political courage in forsaking Bush's war policies, the Democrats have not summoned up the intestinal fortitude necessary to cut off the funds for the Bush-Republican war. I am optimistic, however, that very soon they'll be forced to cross over that important threshold and vote the will of the people who put them in office. Let's face it, cutting off the funding is the only way this war is going to end. God knows Bush and his cronies have no desire to stop it anytime soon, for reasons that are just lost on me. The Republicans have refused to do anything that might end the hostilities in Iraq. They've done nothing that would even help our soldiers cope a little better with their duties in Iraq, as evidenced by their astonishing vote a couple of weeks ago to not allow our military personnel to have time at home equal to the time that they've spent on duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't know how you could vote anything show. I don't know of anything that would show more contempt for our soldiers than that, and disrespect. And despite all of their bloviating about Democrats hurting the morale of our soldiers by calling for an end to the war, nothing could ever match the Republicans' cold-heartedness toward our young men and women serving in the military, as did their vote to keep them from having more time at home. Try and convince anybody otherwise of that. You can watch them talk about the war and see that they're completely enamored by it. They love it. They wanted it. They want it. They want it to continue. And the thought that they just might have to give it up because of political pressures is just killing them. Think about that. You only have to watch the likes of Lindsey Graham talk about the war to know that he's going to break down and cry the day the Republican Party is going to be forced to capitulate to the Democrats and the people of the United States and bring this horror to an end. Time and again, the Republicans, despite their rhetoric to the contrary, have shown that they support the war, but they do not support the troops. The Republicans all seem to be reading from the same script when they repeat the talking points. Iraq will descend into chaos when we leave. Do they really think that isn't the condition the Iraqi people find themselves in now? Have you read the latest statistics of the bodies being found in Baghdad? They are appalling. Do they really think that a continued American military presence in Iraq is going to help settle things between the warring factions? Are they that delusional, really? Do they really think we believe they want to keep our forces in Iraq for some sort of humanitarian, altruistic reasons? Oh, gee, we've got to help the Iraqi people. Give me a break. A Republican thinking that? That's ludicrous to even think that. And I keep hearing them say, forget the offense, the events that led us into the debacle. We're there now, and we have to fix what we broke. I heard Lindsey Graham say that just last week. Oh, I know. I don't want to talk about how we got in there. We're there, and we have to fix it now. Never mind that people tend to learn from history. They don't want to learn from this. They want us to forget their lies and their distortions of the facts that take us to war. They want us to forget their mismanagement of the war. They want us to forget that this administration gave its blessing to Donald Rumsfeld and General Tommy Franks to run the war the way they saw fit, and that it turned out to be a disaster of major proportions. They want us to trust them after all of that. And true to form, just as I and many of you predicted, they're now beginning to backpedal on their pledge to get a comprehensive report in September. Already we're hearing that it may not be till next summer that they'll be able to give a valid report as to the success or failure of the surge. And God, I'm growing to hate that word. The only surge has been in violence and the deaths of military soldiers and the deaths of more innocent Iraqis. Stop and think about it. It would seem to me that by now, even the most loyal Republican, even the most jaded, jingoistic neocon might have enough sense to realize that it's time to leave. It's long overdue. We have the most modern military in the world, and we're fighting a small group of people who have nothing in the way of weapons except veritable sticks and stones in by way of comparison, and we're losing. Say what you will, we are losing. That fact is absolutely undeniable. We have thousands of wounded veterans to show for it. We have over 3,600 dead military personnel who have, and I'm sorry, have died in vain. We've got a financial burden of at least $600 billion of borrowed money, and there is still no resolution to this mess in sight. The Republicans want to continue on this course, which shows exactly how out of touch they are with the American people and with the cold, harsh reality of the Iraqi situation they made possible by fully cooperating with a commander-in-chief who has demonstrated time and again an appalling lack of leadership and an astonishing lack of knowledge about Middle Eastern affairs. He's not alone. Over the years, there have been many Westerners who have shown a total lack of understanding concerning the problems of that volatile area, but none have ever been so foolish so as to involve us in a conflict that's cost us so much in lives and in treasure. It's time to stop it, and it's time to stop it now. And yet they keep coming back and saying, trust us, we'll resolve this. They caused this. They have backed this from start to finish. They have escalated this. Everything they've done in Iraq has turned to crap. We have all the evidence we need of that, and still, there's a percentage of the American people say, no, we'll trust them, we'll let them try again. When does it end? When does the patience of the Republicans run out? I watched Chris Matthews last night and some smart-ass young Republicans on there defending the whole thing. And Matthews asked the question of which none of them will answer it. None of them will answer the question, how long do you go with this? How long? You'll never hear a Republican answer that question. They cannot. We cannot have an open-ended war with no end in sight, no end to the cost in lives, no end in the cost to our treasury. And yet they come up with this limp excuse. Well, gee, we don't know what would happen if we left. Yes, we do. We'll have more of the same until the Iraqis get their act together. That's what we'll have. More of the same. We can leave now, and there'll be chaos in Iraq. There's already chaos in Iraq. Or we can leave later, and there'll be chaos in Iraq. Think about it. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is John from Fort Myers.
Hi, John.
I came across something very interesting recently, a piece of history that's so applicable today. And there was a fellow, a retired major general from the Marines, General Smedley Butler, who came before Congress in late 1933 to reveal that some members of the Morgan Bank Group, the DuPont family, some of the head people at General Motors had approached him about the possibility of staging a coup to take over the government because they were so afraid of what was going to happen with this new deal that had just come in with FDR. And they didn't realize that by this time he had become pretty sick of the reasons. He'd been involved in just about every conflict that the Marines were involved in since the Spanish-American War. And he made a speech later that year. And if with your permission, I'd like to read just a short excerpt from his speech. It said, war is just a racket. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of people. Only a small inside group knows what it's about. It's conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the masses. I believe in adequate defense at the coastline and nothing else. If a nation comes over here to fight, then we'll fight. The trouble with America is that when the dollar only earns 6% over here, then it gets restless and goes overseas to get 100%. Then the flag follows, and the dollar and the soldiers follow the flag. I wouldn't go to war again as I have done to protect some lousy investment of the bankers. There are only two things we should fight for. One is defense of our homes, and the other is the Bill of Rights. War for any other reason is simply a racket. There isn't a trick in the racketeering bag that the military gang is blind to. It has its finger men to point out our enemies, its muscle men to destroy the enemies, its brain men to plan war preparation, and a big boss, supranationalistic capitalism. It may seem odd for me, a military man, to adopt such a comparison. Truthfulness compels me to. I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service as a member of this country's most agile military force, the Marine Corps. By the way, he was only one of, I think, 19 men to win two medals of honor during his service.
Mm-hmm.
So I served in all commission ranks from second lieutenant to major general, and during that period I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I helped make Mexico, especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefits of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of the Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. And in China, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested. During those years, I had, as the boys in the back room would say, a swell racket. Looking back on it, I feel I could have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents. Anyway, that's the end of the excerpt.
Smedley Butler,
yeah.
A man known not to mince words. And I think that's about as heavy an indictment that you could give against the what Eisenhower described as the military-industrial complex. That is what it's all about.
And interestingly, when he came before Congress, and he named names, he told them the dates of the meetings that these people had with them. It's interesting how they were very much like Congress today. Now, to tell you the truth, my history isn't good enough. I don't know if the House was still controlled by Republicans or the Senate was when FDR was in. But the committee decided not to act at all on his. I think it was the Un-American Activities Committee. I didn't know that HUAC actually existed before the early 50s, but apparently did. And nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened.
Well, gee, does that sound familiar?
It certainly does. It keeps repeating itself.
Yeah, we're seeing a little of that right now. We'll talk and investigate and have hearings and all that, but don't worry, we're not really going to do anything meaningful about it. I was roundly criticized yesterday in several emails I got about what I'd said about John Conyers backing down from the impeachment thing and all, and I know people love John Conyers, and I know that we were a bit negative about John Conyers yesterday, but as I told one of them, if you think just because we're Democrats that we don't need to give him a kick in the ass once in a while, why, then you've got your head in the sand. And you know, we hope to to spur them to some action of some kind. But so far, a lot of talk and, as they say in Texas, all hat and no cattle.
Yeah, exactly. I think it seems to me that a number of that every member of Congress who might have a motivation to go forward with impeachment or censure, or I say member of the House, is probably looking at the last term they're going to be in the House, because they're going to give just enough ammunition to whoever's going to come up against them in the next election that's probably going to be in play. Well, you know, big deal.
Well, yeah, but you know, look at a lot of the Republicans that were on the Clinton impeachment panel. A lot of them made it back.
Oh, sure.
So
absolutely. Well, they didn't really have the same kind of they didn't have as concentrated an opposition facing them as these folks do. And you know what? Even wouldn't you like to see somebody up there who just said, you know what, this is probably going to cost me my next election.
Oh, yes.
But it's the right thing to do.
It's
got to be done.
A press conference on national TV saying that. Wouldn't that be sweet?
Absolutely. Along with, you know, because of the outcome is going to be as probably as sure as I think it is, I'm not going to spend one more day of my remaining term raising money.
Yeah,
corollary.
And instead of something stupid like George Allen's macaca words or something like, instead of that costing them their seat, principles costing them their seat, or willing to gamble it on principle. My, that would be refreshing.
And it makes you wonder if a man or woman can stand on principle and lose their office, can they come back as something else? Because we know that if a person loses his office as a result of committing a felony, that he can come back and be a media star within a decade.
Absolutely.
We've seen that in at least two instances.
We sure have.
I love the way the conservatives, especially the ones who are in power, in office, are always talking about the messages that we send. What message does it send to a young person, to anybody, to say you can lie before Congress, you can commit an act that might in some measure be called treason, you can be convicted, you can avoid jail like Oliver North did, or you can go to jail like Liddy did, and just sit low for a few years, we'll get you some job with a think tank somewhere in the meantime, and you can come back as a media star.
Yeah, don't worry, you'll be fine. Hey, John, I got to run.
All right.
We got our guest coming up at the bottom of the hour. Thank you for a great call.
Appreciate you.
It's good
call
to hear about Smedley Butler.
yes, indeed.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye now. Oh, yes, it is time to break away for a break right now, and while we're gone, we'll get our guest, Rick Perlstein, on the line, and we'll be back in just a minute or two.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send to somewhere I can't even spell the name of.
I reckon the guy.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky.
Yeah.
Welcome to the new American century.
We're being heard on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come on, you black and Hispanic boys. We'll keep you poor so you got no choice but to join the army in your prime and fight for Uncle Sam and die. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
And we're back here at the Guy James Show, and as promised, we have our guest on the line. We have Rick Perlstein with us. He's coming to us from Chicago today, and of course, Rick, involved with the Campaign for America's Future. We were to that big Take Back America conference not too long ago in Washington. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Guy. Good to be here.
How's things in Chicago today?
Lovely weather.
Oh,
looks like we're in for 70 degrees and sunny for the rest of the week.
I could take that for a while since I'm sitting here in South Florida and at 95 and humid as can be and all that. The reason we asked you to come on the program today was to talk about this mess that happened in New York City last week, and it's not indicative of just New York City, but the entire country, the infrastructure, and I think everybody remembers about the explosion that a lot of people thought was a terrorist act for a while in, it was pretty close to Manhattan's Grand Central Station, right?
It was right across the street. It's, you know, really the busiest commercial district in the universe, just about. Yeah, it was about a week ago today at rush hour, and the first thing that happened after, you know, like basically the pavement starts spewing, you know, 200-degree steam 1,000 feet into the air, you know, killing one person, you know, swallowing up a tow truck, you know, shutting down this huge commercial district is, you know, Mayor Bloomberg goes in the air and says, don't worry, everything's all right, it wasn't a terrorist attack. And, you know, that's great. You know, I don't like terrorist attacks. I'm glad it wasn't a terrorist attack.
Well, at least he didn't run down the street and tell his police chief, thank God George Bush is our president.
Oh, well, you know, that was the last guy. And we're going to talk about him, by the way, because he is a very important part of this story. But the fact of the matter is, this is in a lot of ways worse than a terrorist attack, because this could happen anywhere. The reason this explosion occurred is because New York has these nearly 100-year-old pipes, and that is the condition more and more across the United States. The American Society of Civil Engineers puts out a report card in this stuff, and they gave our underground pipes a D-. And one of the consequences of that is, you know, what we saw in New York, but even more mundanely, in cities all over the United States, they're enjoying a phenomenon that you down there in Florida know really well, which is sinkholes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they sound trivial, but a year ago, this little boy in Texas, Elian Mahano, you know, he fell into one of these sinkholes. I mean, that should be a national name. You know, I mean, we know Elian Gonzalez. We know, you know, all the pretty little blind girls who, you know, disappear. But this is deadly stuff. I mean, just the other day, a horse died by falling into a sinkhole.
Well, those sinkholes aren't a big problem until it's your house that's sliding down into one. That's the attitude everybody has.
Well, how about if it's the middle, in North Carolina this week, it's in the middle of one of the busiest highways, one of the busiest corridors in the state. You know, this is really cutting into America's economic competitiveness.
And it's not Mother Nature that's causing all this either.
No,
it's because of what we've done.
It's not Mother Nature. It's a word that begins with a C that I write a lot about my blog, A Campaign for America's Future, and that word is conservatism. When you decide that your highest goal for domestic politics is cutting taxes no matter what, this is your just desserts. These sinkholes, that explosion in New York, that's your canary in the coal mine. And mark my words, a generation from now, people will say, what the heck were we thinking? Because we are leading America to a very, very dangerous place. And in fact, the International Herald Tribune, the big, you know, newspaper, daily newspaper in Europe, has started to report about the crumbling American infrastructure as basically the beginning of the end for American economic dominance. It's ugly stuff, and we can all charge this to that old Ronald Reagan ideology that government is always the problem and never the solution.
Well, I wonder what the private sector is going to do about what is it? It's nearly a couple of trillion dollars now we're talking about to fix this problem.
We're up to $1.6 trillion. That's what the civil engineers say. But that means, you know, fixing everything. You know, Stern, they have some great fixes on their website. It's American Society of Civil Engineers. Google it. They have some great fixes that won't cost all that much. And, of course, you know, it's really a matter of just getting our political priorities straight. It's very interesting that New York tried an experiment, you know, during the 90s. Most cities have Democratic mayors. They tried a conservative mayor. And Rudy Giuliani is going around the country, running for president, bragging that when he was mayor of New York, he cut taxes 23 times. He's bragging that he cut the budget of every facet of New York government, whether it needed it or not. He's going to New Hampshire and saying that the reason New Hampshire has a good economy is that they don't have any income taxes at all. Well, you know, lo and behold, that's the conservative ideology. And New York, we've had a case study. You know, without the flywheel of good progressive liberal politics that takes care of public problems when they arise, this is the kind of rot we can expect.
Rick, how do you see this ridiculous difference in ideologies? We've got the conservatives on one side that say, well, it's okay if the infrastructure crumbles. Somebody else will pay for it. I'm not going to. And on the other side, constantly wanting to cut taxes and so forth, not wanting to pay their fair share, not understanding that despite what Grover Norquist says, we do need tax money in this country to take care of things. And yet, over and over and over again, the conservatives have won elections on this platform.
Yeah, but the jig is up, right? It's like a guy who keeps on buying lottery tickets, you know, hoping that he'll cover his bets. And, you know, they've been able to pull it off for, you know, 20 or 30 years. But really, the Iraq War is kind of a logical consequence of this. It's, you know, just, you know, basically this fantasy thinking that everything's always going to turn out because we're the United States of America and nothing can go wrong. And we're the strongest and our daddy can beat up your daddy. And, you know, the jig is up. I mean, look what happened in 2006. That was a very ideological election. People chose progressive government over conservative government. And, you know, I just think they're at the end of their rope. I mean, what happens is, you know, this is the first time, really, these last, you know, 5 years, basically, before the 2006 election, where the American people got a chance to see conservatives actually governing. They had the Congress. They had the presidency. They had most of the Judiciary Committee. Well, they had the Judiciary Committee. They had the judicial branch of the federal
right.
government, too. And people saw, finally, what happens when these guys get to do what they want. You get Katrina. You get the sinkholes. You get Iraq. You get the cronyism. You get the corruption. And, you know, had this happen in the 80s, I mean, don't forget, Ronald Reagan had to deal with Tip O'Neill. You know, he had to deal
yes.
with Ted Kennedy. He had to deal with a liberal Democratic Congress. He wasn't able to get much accomplished at all. Had this happened in the 1980s, I think the jig would have been up then.
Well, as we always say, they're great at getting elected. They just can't govern.
Well, they don't believe in government.
No.
How can you turn the government over to someone who says that their ideology is that they have a contempt for government?
Exactly.
You know, would you turn over a grocery store to someone who says they have a contempt for grocery stores?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. What do you see happening across the country on this infrastructure problem? I mean, here we are squandering money, the hundreds of billions of dollars in Iraq now, and are we going to be able to afford to do it?
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, we're still the richest country in the world. You know, we are going to end this Iraq war eventually, and you know, look at some of the tax cuts we're talking about here. I mean, they're cutting taxes on the people who manage hedge funds. You know, they're cutting their tax rate to 15%. That can, you know, pay for a lot of sinkholes, quite frankly. We can afford this. We can afford it without raising taxes for working people. And, you know, it's just a matter of turning the corner. It's just a matter of heading in the right direction. You know, I have a lot of faith in the American people. I have faith that they're going to see that this is really a gut issue. This is a kitchen table issue. This is an issue on which their bread is being buttered.
Well, you wrote another article recently about the foreclosing of America.
Yeah,
and you talk about a kitchen table issue. If anybody's got their kitchen table left right now,
But it's not just a kitchen table. It's also a Wall Street issue. The whole, you know, the hedge funds collapsed.
Oh, yeah.
$10 billion hedge funds collapsed because of these foreclosures.
The foreclosure problem is an extremely, well, like you said, it's hitting all across the board now. It's actually hitting some of the fat cats in the pocketbook instead of just Joe and Sally lunch bucket that they're losing their houses. What do you see as the end of that? Is it coming anytime soon?
Well, I would love to see the Democrats step up and say, this is a problem for politics. You know, Franklin Roosevelt, when this is happening in the 1930s, he said, unfair and forced liquidations is proper concern of the federal government. You know, it is a proper concern of the federal government because it's not just an individual problem. You know what happens when a house forecloses on your block? It lowers the property values of every house in the block. You know what happens when property values are lowered on a block? They're lowered, you know, in an entire municipality. And you know how those schools are funded. They're funded by property taxes. The government has to step in. There has to be some enlightened regulation of this stuff. And, you know, we're not seeing it yet. And, you know, of course, anything that happens, Bush would probably veto anyway. I mean, a lot of this is his fault. I mean, he hired these regulators. You know, they didn't, his head of his Office of Thrift Supervision didn't discipline a single SNL during his entire term.
Right.
And these are the guys who are making these crazy loans and, you know, basically bilking people out of their life savings.
Well, don't I know it. I live in an area of the country here in southwest Florida that's being drastically affected by the foreclosures and the dropping of property values because of foreclosures. There are, if you can believe it, after this boom, this housing market boom that we had for, well, it ended a couple of years ago. But there are actually realtors in this area now with people called to list their homes and said, no, I'm not interested in listing your home. I wouldn't be able to sell it if I did list it.
Yeah, and the guys who are selling foreclosed homes are, of course, making a killing. The bottom feeders, the vultures.
Well, the foreclosures are going well, and the people that buy them, even in this area, I see interviews with them, the people that that buy them up are saying they're holding off because they think we're not near the bottom yet.
Wow. What do you say to that?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's a matter. Even if we don't, you know, take some proactive action to help people who are foreclosed, even if we really don't build a real progressive politics of home ownership like they did in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and turned us into a homeowning nation, you know, the GI Bill, the mortgage reduction, the Federal Housing Administration, which, by the way, enforced very strict terms about what kind of loans you could give someone. It was a very highly regulated thing, and that's what created the great American middle class. Even if we can't expect that again, and I hope we can, you know, President Clinton, when he had a Democratic Congress in 1994, did pass some very good regulations for these kind of bottom-feeding mortgage brokers. Now, what happened was, you know, they eventually caught up to the regulations and figured out how to get around them, and then by that time Bush was in office and the game was up. So, you know, there is hope. You know, we put in some good progressive legislators and get a good progressive president in there. You know, this probably will not be able to happen again until the next Republican administration.
Well, I hope you're right on that. Recently, well, I know you attended, and a lot of us attended, the Campaign for America's Future, the Take Back America Conference in Washington. I was very heartened to see the tremendous response to it this year. It was bigger and better than last year.
I think it was like 3,000 people, yeah.
Yeah, last year it wasn't that many, and the Radio Row was bigger this year, and it just was a tremendous time. How did you get started, get involved with the Campaign for America's Future?
Well, I have been a professional freelance writer. I don't know if you know about the book I wrote about Barry Goldwater and the rise of the conservative movement. It's called Before the Storm, and a magazine writer. And I was basically approached by them to be a blogger. I blog for them half-time. I do freelance writing the other half-time. And my blog, by the way, is at ourfuture.org/thebigcon. And I started with them in April, and it's great because this is really, over in Washington, this is the clearinghouse that all the liberal and progressive groups go to when they want to coordinate a campaign. You know, these are the guys who really got it together and bird dog President Bush when he was trying to privatize Social Security. So I'm real proud to be involved with them, and I'm really proud to be a part of a movement that's, you know, in the ascendancy and the upslope. You know, it's a time for optimism.
Well, you and Robert Borsage
are great
great spokesmen for the group and for the movement, and I want to thank you for all you do. You've been out and about getting things out in the public and with interviews like this and your articles and you gave you okay folks commonsense.ourfuture.org.
Yeah, that's the main blog.
The main blog.
All my stuff there.
We like to want to be sure and get that out. We got a number of Rick's fine articles on there. In fact, just about anything you've written in the last year or so for that is on there. And some great reading and some great logic and some great points that you've made. Rick, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. And your blog, once again?
You can get to it at ourfuture.org/thebigcon.
Okay, the big con. All right,
thanks
got it.
Thanks for what you do, Guy.
Hey, thanks so much. Good to hear from
Take
you.
Take care.
Bye now. Rick Perlstein from Campaign for of America's Future and a tremendous spokesman for that organization. I do enjoy talking to him. We usually meet up with him every time we go to one of the big soirees in Washington that has to do with that. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break right now, and we'll be right back.
Bye-bye, Bush. Bye-bye, Dick Cheney. Hello, democracy. I think I'm gonna smile. Impeachment's now in style. There goes my country with someone new. She sure looks happy. Bush sure is blue. He was the leader till Truth stepped in. Now George is wondering what might have been. Bye-bye, Bush. Bye-bye, Dick Cheney. Hello, democracy. I think I'm gonna smile. Impeachment's now in style. I'm through with Rumsfeld. I'm tired of Rice. I'm sick of listening to all those lies. And here's the reason why I'm so free. We're taking back our democracy. Bye-bye, Bush. Bye-bye, Dick Cheney. Hello, democracy. I think I'm gonna smile. Impeachment's now in style. And here's the reason why I'm smiling. Bush is on his unemployment line. Bye-bye, Bush. Bye-bye, Dick Cheney. Hello, democracy. I think I'm gonna smile. Impeachment's now in style. Impeachment's now in style. Impeachment's now in style.
This man, seriously, the country has fuck up fatigue, which is what happens when a guy fucks up so much that when he fucks up again, people go, "Oh, what do you expect? He's a fuck up," and that's fucked up. He has now convinced himself that history will be kind to him. It's just us in the present who don't get it. He's the Van Gogh of presidents, you know, not appreciated in this lifetime. But I swear to God, a couple of weeks ago, he was defending his legacy, and he said, "They're still debating our first president." No, they're not. Who's debating whether George Washington was a good president? He's on the one. He's on Mount Rushmore. They named the capital after him. I think the jury is in on this guy. I do. His nickname is Father of the Country. That's about as Kim Jong-il as we're going to get in America, I hope. You know, Rudy Giuliani, another brilliant assessor of people and presidents, he actually brags on the campaign trail that on 9/11, as the towers are going down, he turned to his super corrupt chief of police and said, "Thank God George Bush is president." That alone should disqualify a person from any higher office. Oh, my God. Yeah, right, Rudy. Whenever I'm looking down the barrel of Muslim fundamentalists with nuclear ambitions, I want a guy who's not smarter than a fifth grader to be heading up our team. I kid George Bush with love. I hope that comes through. Because when it comes to standing on rubble and making speeches in front of trees and hugging black kids, he's the best. He is. And praying. America, I swear to God, what a country. The way we have a disaster, whenever there's a disaster, Bush shows up and says, "I'm going to pray." And people go, "Well, he's on it. We got this covered," because he's praying, which is nearly as good as hoping it were so. And that's why I'm telling you, Rudy Giuliani is probably going to be the next president of the United States. I'm sorry. Because it's all about image. He's got the big anti-terrorist image, you know? And I'm telling you, on January 20th, 2009, you may very well be welcoming to the White House Rudy Giuliani and his lovely wife, whoever that may be at the time. We don't know that now. I love it. He's had three wives, right? McCain, two wives. Fred Thompson, two wives. Newt Gingrich, three wives. The only monogamous Republican, Mitt Romney, the Mormon. And you know this, too, that Rudy's first wife was his cousin? I'm not making that up. I think that is a very cheap way to go after the Southern vote. That's insulting to the South. And on the Democratic side, you know that the only two candidates who could not actually run together on a ticket are Hillary and Barack Obama, because that's too much non-male whiteness at one time for America. They would freak out. And the Republicans would have a field day if they ran together. First, Bush would call like 12 fake terror alerts. And then the Republicans would run like a series of ads about how terrorism is happening now again and the wolf is at the door and this is no time to trust the country to a woman and a black teenager. Rudy Giuliani, vote for him. He was there, you know. Yeah, because they did so well before, the white men, you know. Like, I flew in yesterday. I wish someone would just start fly at your own risk airlines. How about that? You can can have your hair gel. You can have your lighter. You can have a fucking gun. How about that? You can show up at the gate 5 minutes before the plane leaves and pay in cash like in the good old 1980s. The ticket just says shit happens on the back because that's the way it is anyway in this country. This country needs to get over itself. Seriously, it's not the 1950s anymore. We're not the most efficient. We're not the most healthy. We're not the most respected. I'm not hating on America. These are facts. This is a challenge to America. I'm tired of people saying, "This is the greatest country in the world." How would you know? Always from the people who've never been anywhere, just pulling it out of their ass. It's the greatest country, you know? Why can't it just be the greatest country for us? I'm not asking for the check, but it's so childish. The greatest country in the world. It's like saying, "I have the greatest wife in the world." Not just the one best suited for me, the greatest wife in the world. And if you could have my wife, you'd kill your wife.
Oh, a little bit of Bill Maher there. Bill cracks me up. He really does. Guy's got a good handle on political reality, if you ask me. I don't think he's partisan at all. When one side or the other has a knock coming, Bill will administer it happily and in a funny way. Funny, funny guy. 866-546-5254. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We just had Rick Perlstein of Campaign for America's Future on the program today. And, gosh, we've got a lot of interesting guests coming up here in the future. And we'll tell you about that a little bit later. But we try and book some interesting folks for you. We welcome you to call the program, 866-546-5254. If you've got minutes left on your phone plan, why, you can call us at 941-876-6896. I'd love to talk to you. We often get some very good calls. I had an excellent call from John in Fort Myers just a short time ago, and we thank him for that. Always good to hear from the local folks as well. Yes, it is. As I was talking to Rick, I've been reading the real estate news here where I live, and I know it's in bad shape in several sectors of the country right now, and in no place is it much worse than it is right here. But I think Southwest Florida is a graphic example of the housing boom that went on for several years, and property went up, up, and up. And that all ended about 2 years ago right now. People were actually fighting over properties to buy them. You couldn't even... if a place came up for sale in the morning, it was usually gone by noon or a little bit later if it was any kind of a property at all. I know that's hard to believe, but it was true. And the bottom has dropped out, and people's property values have plummeted. Taxes are up, insurance is up, insurance is markedly up, and foreclosures are really up. And you know, Rick mentioned about the people that buy up the foreclosures. Very often you find people that wait for the bottom to market out, that come up with a good assessment of where the market's going to bottom out, and then they jump in and buy all of them that they can buy and hang on for a little while and make a big, big profit off of somebody else's misfortune. Somebody has to sell the foreclosures, and of course, that helps both sides out. So it helps the banks, it helps the person that's many times being faced with foreclosure, and also helps the people buying them. So it's but it's an ugly situation. As I mentioned, I do know people who have tried to list property here locally, and the realtors just simply look at them and say, no, I'm not interested at any price. I can't sell what I have. Why should I list more? I know that's hard to believe, but it's the reality of the situation, and that's happening at other places in the country as well. I don't want to be the harbinger of things to come and doom and gloom in here and all that, but I don't think it's bottomed out yet. I don't think it's near the bottom yet. The big real estate and the big loan companies keep saying, well, you know, we're just about at the bottom. I don't think we are, and I think they're saying, like Countrywide, for example, big mortgage company. They don't want to admit that it's bottomed out, because the farther down it goes, the more their stock goes down. They've taken a big hit recently with their stock. And so everybody's hoping that we're near the bottom, and they're trying to keep the mindset a little more positive than it actually should be. And I don't blame them for that, but things are looking a bit grim on the real estate market all around the country. If you've got a comment about how it is where you live, why, give us a call, 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for news here in just a moment, coming up at the top of the hour. We hope you'll stay with us during the news. We've got a lot of things to talk about in the next hour of the program. I see the subpoenas were issued today, or at least they voted to go ahead and subpoena the folks at the White House that refused to come before the Judiciary Committee. Let's see if that holds any water. They'll never get the people convicted of that. I think we already know that from the Justice Department. It's probably an exercise in futility, but it needs to be done anyway, just to prove a point that they're willing to go through with it. Makes the Democrats look like they got a little bit of spine anyway, I hope. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we hope you'll be with us when we come back for another hour of the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
There has been much discussion that airstrikes intended to knock out or set back the Iranian nuclear program located at hardened underground facilities would require small tactical nuclear devices or conventional explosive bombs of a size and design never before used.
Democratic candidates in the 2008 presidential race last night launched a livelier, more direct form of political debate. YouTube, the video sharing website, joined with CNN to allow a cross-section of Americans to question the challenges in 30-second video clips.
Former Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega asked a Miami court to block his extradition to France to face money laundering charges. Noriega's status as prisoner of war may entitle him to repatriation under the Geneva Convention. Panama wants to try him for murder and human rights violations.
For more breaking news and exclusive interviews, go to our website, innworldreport.net. Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa has come up with a novel solution to preserve the environment while easing the poverty of his people. Correa wants wealthy nations to pay Ecuador $350 million a year in exchange for leaving an estimated 1 billion barrels of oil under the ground in the pristine Yasuni rainforest. Environmentalists around the world have celebrated the idea, apparently the first of its kind, as a way to preserve a delicate environment without creating an economic burden for the cash-strapped nation. The move came amid growing popularity of carbon offsetting, in which first world residents concerned about climate change make donations to compensate for environmental damage caused by oil consumption. Former Energy Minister Alberto Acosta has pointed out that all the oil in the untapped oil field would only be enough for 12 days of global crude consumption.
The New Zealand Herald reports that if the severe drought now blanketing the Amazon forest continues for one more year, it could tip the entire region into a cycle of destruction. Scientists said that global warming and deforestation were pushing the Amazon area toward a tipping point where it would start to die. The wet Amazon basin would turn to dry savanna at best, desert at worst. This would cause much of the world to become hotter and drier. The symposium was convened by Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew of the Greek Orthodox Church, dubbed the Green Pope.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Give countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show here for the second hour of the program today on this Wednesday afternoon. Glad to have all of you along with us today. 866-546-5254, should you be inclined to call the program today. That's 866-546-5254. And if you'd like to call on your nickel, you can do that at 941-876-6896. Love to take your calls today. I heard that story about the Amazon there during the news, and things like that always pique my interest. As many of you know, I live in Southwest Florida. That's where the show originates from. And we're right here on the border of the Florida Everglades. And I just want to tell you about a little story concerning our little neighborhood here with the Everglades. Skip Snow, who's a biologist that I actually know, he's a biologist down at the Everglades National Park. I've spoken to him. He said he would love to spend his days monitoring the dizzying array of native wildlife across this 1.5 million acre river of grass west of the ever-expanding Miami metropolis. But lately, he's been spending ever more time studying the remains of the park's birds and animals extracted from the stomachs of captured or road-killed Burmese pythons, the latest and most spectacular addition to Florida's growing list of biological interlopers. Opening a packed freezer in a laboratory down a dusty side road in the park, Snow sifted dated plastic bags containing fur, feathers, bones, and other vestiges of recent python prey. Said we found everything from very small mammals. He's talking about in the stomachs of these snakes now. Very small mammals, native cotton mice, native cotton rats, rabbits, squirrels, possums, raccoons, even a bobcat, and recently the hooves of a deer. Everything from a house wren up through wading birds and water birds, pipe-billed grebes, coots, egrets, limpkins, and at least one big alligator. I know some of you saw that picture of the alligator being swallowed by the Burmese python. The one of the most remarkable animal life photos I ever saw. The South Asian snakes, which can top 300 pounds and 20 feet long, are presumed to have entered the park as discards or escapees from the bustling international trade in exotic pets. Year-old foot-long pythons are a popular $70 item at reptile fairs, but in a few years can reach room-spanning, cat-munching size, prompting some owners to abandon them by the roadside. And this practice may not pose an ecological problem in Detroit, Snow said, but in a near-tropical Florida park such as the Everglades, it's an unfolding nightmare. And they actually have crews out looking for these snakes now, trying to catch them, trying to eradicate them, because they are not native to this area. And they've found more than 350 of them since 2002 here. And they say there's at least 10 more for every one that's seen. And to give you an idea of how prolific these snakes are becoming, when they found the first clutch of eggs, they say there were 44 eggs in it, 42 fertile. And shortly afterwards, they found another clutch of eggs of 24 already hatched. So this is a big problem, these Burmese pythons in the area where we live. I tell you what, I don't want to walk out my back door and see one around here. We already have, there's a pond here close to the studio. And we've got a little gator that's recently come in. I don't know where he or she came in from during the dry weather, and we've had extremely dry weather, why they make their way across a lot of land sometimes to get to water. And they found this little pond, so we have our resident gator here. I'm trying to think of a name for him. It's only about 3 or 4 feet long right now, but that won't last long. So everybody's got to keep their house cats and pets and all away from the pond now, because we've got our local gator. I guess that's news you didn't need to know, right? 866-546-5254. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. I came across this interesting story about the possibility of terrorists conducting dry runs now for attacks. Have you seen that? And I'm not one of these that gets on a plane and worries about that. Are you? Do you think about that when you get on a plane? I certainly don't. I don't think it's ever crossed my mind. While I've been on a plane, I guess we all wonder what we would do if that happened, if we were on a plane like on 9/11 and all that. And I guess the only way we would know what we would do is if we were ever actually accosted with that situation. Then we'd find out what we would do. Until then, we can talk about it all we want, but we don't really know how we'd react and react until the time came. But the story goes on to say that airport security officers around the nation have been alerted by federal officials to look out for terrorists practicing to carry explosive components onto aircraft. Practicing. Based on 4 curious seizures at airports since last September. The unclassified alert was distributed on July the 20th by the Transportation Security Administration to federal air marshals, its own transportation security officers, and other law enforcement agencies. The seizures at airports in San Diego, Milwaukee, Houston, and Baltimore included wires, switches, pipes or tubes, cell phone components, and dense clay-like substances, including block cheese. And the bulletin said the unusual nature and increase in number of these improvised items raises concern. Security officers were urged to keep an eye out for ordinary items that look like improvised explosive device components. And it's a lengthy report that was posted by NBC Nightly News a few nights ago. But what do you think? Are they practicing? Are they practicing for another one? It appears that maybe they are. They were, the 4 seizures, let me just describe the 4 seizures and tell me what you think. In San Diego, on July the 7th, a U.S. person, and they don't say who, whether these people were arrested or what, a U.S. person, either a citizen or a foreigner, legally here, checked baggage containing 2 ice packs covered in duct tape. The ice packs had clay inside them rather than normal blue gel. Who would do that? And in Milwaukee on June the 4th, a U.S. person's carry-on baggage contained wire coil wrapped around a possible initiator, an electrical switch, batteries, 3 tubes, and 2 blocks of cheese. The bulletin said block cheese has a consistency similar to some explosives. And in Houston on November the 8th, a U.S. person checked baggage contained a plastic bag with a 9-volt battery, wires, and a block of brown clay-like minerals and pipes. So it appears these people are trying to see whether or not these things will get through security, maybe find weaknesses in our security system to get ready for the real thing. What do you think? Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
Hi. I'd like to comment on these reports. It's my belief that, this is our government at work, to scare the people, I believe, Guy, after a lot of looking into it, I believe that, the elements of our, government were, involved in, letting these 9/11 attacks happen, the people in charge of defense at the time were part of this PNAC group, and the PNAC document, you've mentioned it, calls for the invasion of Iraq, the setup of a permanent military presence there, followed by subsequent invasions of Iran and Syria. And these guys have been on plan all along, and people say the Iraq debacle has been mishandled, and they don't know what they're doing. I I'd like to suggest or submit the idea that a quagmire is exactly what they wanted to happen in Iraq, and there's three aircraft carrier strike forces in the Persian Gulf right now, and we've got Chertoff and all these other neocons. What's his name? The other guy, McConnell or whatever, saying that he's got a gut feeling we're going to get attacked, and here in the United States this summer, and all this stuff.
They're certainly not adverse to pumping it up the volume on that when things get a little testy on the political scene around here. That seems like something like that always comes out.
Sure, and the document, the Northwoods document, which is a declassified document from 1962, the Joint Chiefs of Staff described how they were going to stage terror attacks on the American people and blame it on Cuba, and Kennedy didn't go for it and fired the chief of Joint Chiefs of Staff. The chief guy there, I forget his name. So this is something that is not way out there if it's been considered. And then you look at the Gulf of Tonkin, which is totally declassified now. It's in the National Archives Library of Congress, whatever, since November of 2005, where they released the audio of Johnson and McNamara's, basically creating the attack on the destroyers that didn't happen in the Gulf of Tonkin, so they can get the Tonkin Gulf resolution, and then what happened after that.
Well, I think they've learned from history on that. There have been several wars that we know of throughout history, some involving us, some not, where one country was looking for the slightest provocation, the slightest excuse to be able to, valid or not, to go invade another country, and I think the Gulf of Tonkin incident was certainly one of those.
Yeah, and that's our government. That's the United States government. And people have to remember the government is not the country, And we as Americans have a responsibility. In order to remain a free people, we have a responsibility with that to keep a check on our government,
Well, Phil, do you think we're getting anywhere with it? Do you think we're making any progress?
I think so. There was a conference, an emergency anti-war conference in Philadelphia on July 4th, earlier this month. And it was put together by people from the 9/11 Truth Movement. What they did was they invited people from the impeachment movement and the anti-war movement, the Iraq Veterans Against the War, even military families speak out and said, "Come on, let's get together here. We're up against the same group of folks that are hurting us. We have some information. Keep an open mind. Look at this. There's over 250 9/11 victim family questions that weren't addressed, and there's just so many anomalies that the crew that's in the White House now, the PNAC guys who are sold us Iraq and are now banging the drums for Iran, we're going to get hit. We're going to, there's already an executive order in place that if we or Britain are attacked, whether it be on U.S. soil or elsewhere, we have the okay to launch attacks on Iran.
Well, I'm just discouraged.
I think Cyrus was writing about that.
I'm discouraged at the lack of progress. There aren't demonstrations every week. There aren't massive demonstrations. There aren't hundreds of thousands of people protesting in Washington. I'm very discouraged as to any progress that we've. I mean, I know we'd like to make some progress on this, but
we're really up against it. And I think you had David Swanson on yesterday, and they. I'll tell you who's been doing it, Guy. is the women in Code Pink, you know? They rented out a house outside of Washington, D.C., where women from all over the country will take, an extended weekend or they'll take a week's vacation and spend it there. And they are actually in the halls of Congress, in these people's offices, like yesterday, 47, Americans calling on Conyers of the Judiciary Committee to do his damn job and carry on impeachment proceedings. They did a sit-in in that office, and it was Monday, and there was a simultaneous sit-in in his Detroit office, you know, for the people who couldn't get to Washington, D.C. And it doesn't, you know, we talk about it, but I want to ask the listeners now, and maybe we should have a survey, you know, how many of those of us saying, you know, we really need 100 million people in the streets, there hasn't been enough people, how many of them are actually going to a weekly protest themselves?
Very few.
You know?
Very few.
That's what I mean, and I'm talking about those amongst us, Guy.
Well, here's the problem, Phil, the way I see it, and I think it's always been the case, at least in the last couple of decades. I especially when it comes to funding movements and so forth, the Democrats, and I shouldn't even say Democrats, I should say people on the left, fail to put their money where their mouths are most of the time. They talk a good game, but when a push comes to shove, they don't get out and get things done the way the people on the right do, and that's the way I see it. That's the way it is, and
yeah.
I would hope that it'd be changing faster than it is, but I don't see it.
Well, you know what it comes down to, Guy. It comes down to, it starts with me, it begins with me, you know, and you really don't need money to stand on a corner with a sign, you know, saying, you know, impeach07.org or something. And that's the thing with these signs, you know, honk for peace. It's not what we need. We need to, you know, we need to inform our fellows. So when you're out there with signs, you know, make them informative. Give these folk, you know, put the number for the White House switchboard on there, you know, where we can just pepper these people in Congress with telephone calls. This is something we have to, you know, people are so beaten down, you know, well, what can I do about it, you know? There are things we can do, and that's part of the education. But there is, you know, we've had this conversation before, Guy. You know, the average American household watches 4.83 hours of television per day. You know, and there's no excuse, damn it. You know, that's 35 hours a week, for crying out loud. You know, and if the listeners can't give one or two of those 35 hours, man, I have a hard time with that.
Well, evidently that's the way they like it, because I just don't see a big change coming forth. I'm so disgusted right now. I mean, here we are, one of the best spokesmen we had as far as impeachment and making things right again between the government and the American people was John Conyers, and now, you know, we've discovered in the last few months that he's forsaken the cause, and I don't really realistically see him seeing him come back to it at all. Unless
he sold out.
Yeah.
And you and I had a conversation after, I went up to Washington January 28th, and I mentioned that we were, Central Florida Group was led the chant impeach Bush while Conyers was talking, you know, on the stage, and we were trying to shout him down, and we did. And because at that point, we knew then he sold us out, Guy. You know, and Nancy Pelosi making that announcement, impeachment's off the table. We've got to stop treating these politicians like they're not our employees, man. Like we, people put them on a pedestal. You know, they figure we got to be nice to them, you know. Hell, I think these people need to be put in their place. And when you had David Swanson on talking about that sit-in in Conyers' office, you know, he mentioned that Conyers had been a friend to the poor and all this all these years, but, hey, what have you done for me today, and what's the issue at hand? You know, and he said, you know, they were arrested. Conyers had the cops come in and arrest them, and David Swanson mentioned that he thought that's the first time Conyers had ever been faced with that kind of opposition.
And I got to tell you, and I've mentioned before on the program today, I caught a lot of hell yesterday over that. The people that love John Conyers, and they were very direct with their comments, I must say, that they really hated the fact that we brought that up. Well, hey, it's not like it didn't happen. We have to talk about it. It's the truth. John Conyers has backed off from the impeachment. He has said it was off the table after Nancy. I mean, he gave it up. What are we supposed to do? Ignore that?
No, and that's what I'm saying. You know, the people, the callers that called in with that, to me, Guy, they're no different than the Republicans letting George Bush get away with, launching a war based on lies because he's their guy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I really think this whole Democrat-Republican thing, you know, it's out of place in the pecking order. First, you're an American, you know. First, you're a responsible American, you know, second, you're a Democrat or a Republican.
Well, it got posted on the Democratic Underground, which is a huge website, yesterday that David was going to be on the show, and you'd be surprised at the comments. Hey, is this the David Swanson one person asked that bashes Democrats? No thanks. I guess they just don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear the truth, and it's very disturbing that you.
And they are failing our troops. They are failing our democracy. They are failing every single dead person on the other end of an M-16, and a 500-pound bomb.
Absolutely.
You know, because they are avoiding. You know, the people that called in with those comments and put their Democratic Party personnel, right or wrong, ahead of what is right. You know, they have forsaken their responsibility.
I agree.
As an American citizen.
I most certainly agree.
And shame on them. You know, and I tore up my Democratic registration card. You know. When they offered that $100 billion to, I've wanted to tear it up. I don't know how many times, you know, over the past couple of years. But when they funded a continued war, so it would be an election issue for the 2008 elections. That's what all that was about.
That's exactly what it was about.
You know, no funding bill, and David Swanson mentioned this. There didn't have to be any funding bill even offered.
Yeah, people just don't understand that, do they? They think we had to send, you know, I've talked to so many people said, well, Bush would just veto anything you do. You don't have to do anything.
Yes, you didn't even, you know, no, and these Democrats, Guy, the people that are holding seats in the Democratic Party are not the Democratic Party. People need to distinguish the party, its principles, and when you say you're a Democrat, or if I say that, which I'm not saying that, but I say that in respect that I'm not a party loyalist. I'm saying it more towards that I'm a person who believes in the Democratic principles.
Absolutely.
You know, see, that's the difference. And I think people, it's blatantly, painfully obvious on the Republican side, you know, and it's painfully obvious the past 6 months or maybe even longer on the Democratic side, meaning when people say they're a Democrat, that means, you know, what they say, but what they do is how I tell what a person means by it. When you offer blind loyalty and no opposition and no accountability, because that person is in your, you know, your party, I think they're confusing.
Blind loyalty blind loyalty has never been good. Is never good. Blind loyalty is the wrong tack to take in almost any situation you could mention. If a group you're involved in is wrong, then it's up to you to stick to your principles and make it right again. And I can't see that a lot is being done to right the party that stood for my principles for so very long. And, you know, big business has infiltrated both parties to a big degree now.
The military-industrial complex, which Eisenhower warned us about in his farewell speech in 61, it's got total control. And you asked what, I'm sorry for cutting you off, Guy, but you asked what we can do. Now, that's the thing. The buck does stop with us, Guy, we the people.
Yes, it does.
You know, these people in office are our representatives, and if they're our employees, and if you're an employer and you got an employee out in the field running the customers, you know, it's on you, you know, to make that right. Do you know what I mean?
It's frustrating to know, and it's like the poll we talked about a little earlier today. Still, 68% of the Republicans polled think that George Bush is doing a good job as president. How do you get through that wall? I mean, I think everybody that's gone to change has changed by now. But
yes,
to know that over two-thirds of the people in that party still think that man is doing a good job, it makes you think, oh my God, is there any use? You know?
Yeah. But also you mentioned something about that in yesterday's show, where you said, I'm just not going to bother with these people anymore, trying to convince them. The wall that we do have to break is these people that are the John Conyers and
right,
every other Democrat who is not screaming at the rooftops for impeachment. You know, this is, it's just like a Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, it is. Here we have Russ Feingold. Can't get any support for a simple censure motion. Can't get any support.
Right.
I'm disgusted by that. I really
and
am.
So there it goes, Guy. The responsibility is ours, we the people. And for all this to continue, this horrible Twilight Zone, this filled with death in our name, and we are responsible for every death at one level or another. We have responsibility for every debt that's going on over in Iraq, because that's going on in our name, and we're a government of we the people. So the ultimate responsibility does rest on we the people. And so keeping to your principles, you know, this is means that what we've been doing or not been doing hasn't been enough. So we have to do more, and people have to turn off that damn TV for a couple of TV programs at least. Give a couple up and do something.
Makes you wonder when you think back when this war started, and I know you well remember, and I do, and most people do, all the little ribbons on the back of the cars, all the little flags flying, all the jingoism that was going on at the time. Makes you wonder how many of those people have changed their minds about it now. I guess we know quite a few have, but not enough. I wonder how many of them thought it would come to this. I think everybody thought, oh, okay, boy, we'll go in there and smash these people, and this will be over with, and yeehaw, we can claim another victory and go home. And it hasn't quite turned out that way in lives or treasure. Phil, thanks for a great call. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Guy.
Yeah, bye.
Bye bye.
Yes, I do wonder, and I did have a chance to talk to somebody at length about that a few days ago. Did you think that this war would end up this way? And the answer, of course, was no, hell no. I didn't think it would turn out this way. I did think it would be a quick... And you know, the government and the Bush administration in Rumsfeld, they had everybody convinced that it would be a quickie. Bang, zoom, in and out of there, just like Gulf One, and it would be over with. Well, they had the good sense during Gulf One not to invade Baghdad. And that's the difference. I think the people were a little smarter then. We're going to take a break. We'll be back.
We will bring to the Iraqi people food and medicines and supplies and freedom.
When we were first starting the reconstruction, there were 500 ways to do it wrong and two or three ways to do it right. What we didn't understand is that we were going to go through all 500.
I was chairman of the National Intelligence Council.
I was the director of strategic policy.
Rumsfeld called me and handled humanitarian affairs, reconstruction.
I had been to Iraq 8 times. I knew what the facts on the ground were.
I had no personnel. We had no phones for a while.
I don't think we can do this.
The president had already made a different decision.
There are volumes on how we should do this. And almost none of this was integrated into the Pentagon's thinking.
We watched our careful planning essentially discarded.
There wasn't enough time, but maybe for the next war.
The Americans were not acting as the police. They didn't know the streets of Baghdad. They didn't speak the language. It was a free-for-all.
There was absolute lawlessness.
We're in a transition period.
Stuff happens.
The Iraqi army was essentially standing there waiting.
The Iraqi army has been disbanded, and I was floored.
You had huge ammunition dumps that weren't guarded.
I'm standing there watching these insurgents pull out rockets and mortars and bombs, and the U.S. say to you, we just don't have enough people to cover it.
We never had a single armored Humvee while we were in Iraq.
Why don't we have those resources?
You go to war with the army you have.
We don't have enough troops.
They'll be back there for their 5th, 6th, and 7th tours of duty.
Last contract I ever signed with the government.
We produced a First National estimate on the state of the insurgency. The president called it guesswork. The president hadn't read it.
Life could be lousy. Life could be okay. Life could be better.
If democracy cannot provide for the Iraqi people, people will say, to hell with democracy, we need strong men.
There are nights when I don't sleep very well.
I just can't hold my peace any longer.
Are the greatest in the world.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
Hey, we've got 18 minutes before the hour here on the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today. Always good to have you along. Appreciate all your email and calls and so forth. Lots of email today. What's with that? Why is the email so busy and the phone's not so busy? If I knew that, I guess I could get a lot of money as a consultant to somebody. But anyway, we don't know the answer to that. So. Hey, you're welcome to give us a call, 866-546-5254. Had somebody send me, actually requested, and then sent me a piece by George Carlin. And I listened to this. I liked it. It's a bit raw, okay? Let me warn you ahead of time. Take all the children out of the room. And if you don't like something a little raw, of course, you know George Carlin. So I'm going to play this. It's a little bit lengthy, but it's funny. I think you'll like it.
There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, the real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later. Because they own this fucking place. It's a big club. And you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the honors count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Okay. I'm back. I guess where George Carlin's concerned, some people love him, and there are those who hate George as well, and I heard from both. For those of you who don't like George Carlin and express that to me, do you think I care? Really, do you? I've liked George Carlin. I was one time I was in L.A. and I was out there for a Rose Bowl game, as a matter of fact, and was staying at the Downtown Hilton. And yes, that's where the package deal happened to put us. I would not stay at the Hilton if it weren't okay. And we were sitting at the went down in the lounge. Was sitting at the bar, and it was a dark lounge at I don't know 5 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that. And I was sitting there and looked out at the end of the bar, and I was with a fellow Ohio State football fan. I looked down, and I said, you know, that's George Carlin sitting down there. And the guy looked at me and said, it's not George Carlin. He wouldn't be sitting in here having a drink by himself in the early evening. It's not George Carlin. I said, it is George Carlin. He said, no, it isn't George Carlin. So anyway, went down there, and sure enough, it was George Carlin, and a friendlier guy you'd never want to meet, really. Absolutely delightful. About the same way he is on the stage, that's how he is off stage. Heck of a guy. And anyway, I enjoyed meeting George Carlin. And no, I didn't ask him for his autograph. I'm not really into that type of thing. Let's head on over to the phones, and if you'd care to call, 866-546-5254. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Your oldest fan here, Guy.
Hey, Dave. Yeah. How old are you, Dave? Oh, no, you didn't mean that. Okay.
Well, I believe Carlin may have been a little colorful in his style, but I think he was right on the money, as was your previous caller, Phil. I think they both brought out a lot of real good. You got some excellent callers and some excellent guests, Guy.
Well, if you don't want to hear their opinions, Carlin, don't listen to Carlin if you don't want to hear the raw truth. And from Phil, you're going to get what's on his mind as well. And I like that about people. Don't be coy. Don't be shy. Lay it out.
I hope he doesn't lay a lot of the blame on himself. He's saying we, the people, we're allowing this to happen in a democracy. And I think Judge Collins calling it more accurately, we have been done in by a coup that was planned, this whole peanut group of psychopathic criminals. And maybe they've been around a lot longer than even I realized, listening to the recounts there on Smedley Butler from another excellent caller earlier. But I don't think it's ever been as bad as what we've got right now.
I don't think they ever got such a complete tight-fisted control on the power in this country as they've had. You know, when you think back over history, the Republicans never really had a tight-fisted control like they have now. This is the most powerful that I think they've ever been. Even during the Nixon years, I don't think they completely controlled. I mean, look at the Justice Department, for God's sake. What's happened to them? These guys have taken it over and have taken no prisoners.
And they planned it out. It's a very willful, deliberate thing, and it's by people who truly lack any kind of concern or caring for the amount of harm they do to us, the people.
I think
Judge Carlin was saying that, however crudely, that they just really don't give a damn about it.
And it's in your face. They just don't care. They don't care where the chips fall. They don't care who they've hurt. They don't care what you and I think. They're marching straight forward with their agenda, and nothing's going to stop them. They think. I hope they're wrong, and I hope we can muster our forces to do something about it. But so far, they've looked a bit anemic on our side.
Well, you know, and I think we've got to see reality as clearly as we can. These are truly, truly dreadful people, capable of anything, and that we have to see it. I think most of America thinks, oh, no, they couldn't be that bad. I just can't believe that, you know, that they just would cause wars to happen. Would they withdraw all aid from Katrina? Would they do all that just to put the Treasury of the United States in their own pocket? And yes, they would, and they are doing it, and they're doing it to us on a daily basis. And the worst of it all is that they're in there because they learned how to rig elections. They planned how to do that. They put the machinery in place and stole the democracy that was a great country. Well,
they have, Dave, and when you think of the ramifications of that Gore-Bush election, when you think of where we're at now and where we might have been otherwise, it's staggering to think where we've come as opposed to where we might have been. All this stuff with this war on terror and all this would have been handled in a much different manner. We would not be at have a war at in Iraq the way we're doing this. If there is a genuine war on terror, it's certainly not being done the right way. You're right. The election, the Gore-Bush election, was a pivotal point in American history, and God help us, I hope we just don't keep spiraling on downward like we have been for the last 6.5 years.
A truly devastating moment for the plight of this country, and I mentioned it yesterday, I think another thing we have to weigh in on all of this is that so many members of our Congress, our government, are getting their piece of the pie, that the big corporate special interests that are profiting so much feel it's a good investment to buy politicians.
All the complicity in Congress is absolutely widespread, and it goes across both party lines. You're absolutely right. It's widespread, and I'm afraid that maybe the big business interest and the lobbying interest have their tentacles spread so far within the Congress. It may be one of those things that's impossible to get them out. I don't know. I hope we're not at that point.
But most all of the congressmen are talking like, I really want to end this war. I really want to bring our troops home. I really want to save them. In reality, they don't vote that way. They're very much saying, how am I supposed to vote on this, Halliburton, Lockheed Martin? How am I supposed to vote on this, Bechtel? You're the ones that's putting all the big bucks in my pocket. And that is criminal. So I mean, it feels like the character of the country has taken a dive for the... How people can do what they do and live with themselves. That's so much harm they do.
If you don't have a conscience, you can live with a lot, Dave. I'm being asked to ask you if you know about Alice, our caller from California. Any news there?
She's doing well. She's slow. She's 94 years old. She listens to you on the headphones of the slave to my computer. I'm sure she'd love to give you a call again here one of these days.
All right. Well, we just wondered. We just wondered, and
I'm glad. I'm glad you asked.
Yeah. Well,
she has a lot of love for the people that I called into the program.
If she didn't hear, be sure and let her know that we asked. Dave, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Yeah,
bye now. Yeah, you stop and think about important times in American history. Of course, the Revolutionary War, War of 1812. The formidable years of this country, the Louisiana Purchase was an important time in this country. Seward's Folly in Alaska turned out to be very important. The Civil War, certainly a turning point in this young nation. The First World War, the New Deal. And without question, the New Deal was a pivotal point in American history. The country could have gone up or down at that moment. Our great sacrifices and victories in the Second World War. But the election of George Bush, and I totally agree with Dave, it was a stolen election, absolutely a stolen election. I think we know that. That was a pivotal time in American history. Will the consequences of it end up being completely devastating to this country, or is it going to be something that's temporary that we can overcome with throwing these bums out in the last remnants of their administration when they're all finally gone and we can sweep the place clean of them and hopefully have some cleaner politicians in office? And I didn't say clean, but cleaner. Hopefully there are some clean ones, and there are a few that I think are. None of them are free from the change of money. And I think until we change that, until we take the money out of the elections, why, we're always going to have a problem with undue influence by people that have got a lot of money as opposed to the people who don't. That's just the way it is. But that election was an important time in American history, and I think years from now when history books are written about it, we'll look back upon that time. Americans will look back upon that time and see that as a bad, bad moment for America when George Bush raised his right hand and swore the oath of office. A bad moment for American history. Well, I do want to thank you for being with us again today. I appreciate your listenership. Always good to have all of you along with us here on the Guy James Show. We'll be back again tomorrow with hopefully another interesting guest. I've got a good one on the hook. We'll see if it comes to fruition, but I'm not going to say anything right now. So thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director of the Guy James Show, and thanks to each and every one of you for tuning in today. I appreciate it. And for all your good emails and comments, I thank you for that as well. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.